I'm Max Jacobson-Gonzalez of ITU, the United Nations Specialized Agency for Information and Communication Technologies. Welcome to the latest episode in our new podcast series, Technology for Good.
I think the threats are significant. They're going to impact us in all sorts of ways. In fact, to be fair, they're already impacting us in all sorts of ways. We see some of them and others we don't.
If the vehicle has been designed in such a way that it's open to attack, that someone can take control of that vehicle, there's nothing you can do as a driver.
In extraordinary situations, such as the current COVID-19 pandemic, children are particularly at risk.
For many of us, COVID-19 has made the world a much more challenging place. It's made us reconsider a number of elements in our life and rely on some a great deal more than ever, in particular, our relationship with information and communication technologies. As young and old have turned to computers and smartphones as the principal and sometimes only way to communicate and receive information while in confinement and social distancing. But with meetings, school lessons, social engagements, and financial transactions all being conducted online every day, are we concerned enough about being connected in a safe manner? Lately, the daunting kind of threats that seemed as if they could only exist in novels or movie scripts have become dauntingly real. Data breach, privacy violation, or mass surveillance are unarguably now, more than ever, real-life concerns. Yet at the same time, artificial intelligence, the internet, and big data can also be used to fight real-life crimes. In this podcast, we focus on cybersecurity and all its ramifications. As far back as 2009, ITU's Child Online Protection Initiative, COP, issued its very first set of Child Online Protection Guidelines, looking at protecting the youngest members of our population, as internet technology was becoming more accessible to children and young people, and so were the dangers. This is now more than ever something to be concerned about. As Doreen Bogdan-Martin, director of the ITU Telecommunication Development Bureau, attested.
The COVID-19 crisis has resulted in a huge surge in all kinds of online criminal activity. Vodafone reported a 300% increase in phishing attacks across its own network. And unfortunately, bad actors have been exploiting fear and uncertainty. And my own cybersecurity team has set up an online repository to really help countries to be able to protect their networks, businesses, and of course their users. And then linked to this, of course, is the risks for children. This has been heightened with so many millions of children now online. And of course, many of these children came online younger than their parents had actually foreseen. And so we on our side are trying to accelerate the launch of our Child Online Protection Guidelines, and they will be coming out in the next couple of weeks.
Salim Evan is director of the Strategy, Policy and Governance Division at the United Nations. He sees digital technology as having the potential to bring about a sustainable future, but warns that the collateral damage of this transition must be mitigated, and that the threats of cybersecurity are very real indeed, something that needs to be addressed.
The Secretary General recently said that he doesn't expect a conventional war in the future not to be preceded by some sort of cyber attack. We are seeing that happening at all kinds of levels. It's happening for all kinds of reasons. Attribution is extremely difficult. The activities in the dark web are extremely, by its very nature, intended to be difficult to track. You have a lot of human trafficking. You have a lot of activities that would affect peace and security, human rights, etc. And those are fundamentally shaping the way that we're using technology. So I think the threats are real. Artificial intelligence is absolutely not solely a force of good. It depends very much on how it's being used, and it could have a significant impact in destabilizing and affecting the geopolitical landscape and changing the way people think, react, and engage with each other. We have really been trying to push this area of technology innovation. We don't believe that we, the United Nations, are going to be the ones that solve all of the world's problems, that we have to work with governments, private sector, public sector, and of course, individuals.
Governments are facing ever more threats, threats to their entire infrastructure as more and more of their systems go online. This is true of large governments or small island nation states, such as Vanuatu in the Pacific. Jeffrey Garay is cybersecurity advisor for the Computer Emergency Response Team, or CERT, Vanuatu.
Because we are connected to the internet as a global connection, we see similar attacks across the globe. However, to a more context for Vanuatu, we see a lot of phishing attacks. So that is, I would say, around 70 to 80% of the attacks coming in phishing related. We also see online scams and a few extortion cases. And of course, malware attacks and injections or intrusion as well. It is actually coming from outside. There are a couple of actors who are quite common attacking this region, and I believe other regions of the world as well. It's across both government and private sector. Even we see attacks in the health sector, the financial, and even the main government as well. In Vanuatu, I think no one or no organization is actually immune to cyber threats. Cases appear everywhere. And from observation, we haven't got any yet that is quite targeted. It's just that they became a target. That is when the attackers leverage it from that point into attacking other organizations within Vanuatu. I would say all our government entities are at risk. It actually placed the whole entire country at risk as well, which is both the government and also the private sector in Vanuatu. In terms of cybersecurity, I think while there are tools out there, I think the key here is awareness. Security at times it comes down to educating the user on the best practices and the guidelines on how to use the internet and be safe on the internet.
Just how safe we need to be is brought to the fore when it comes to an issue that we may not be focusing on right now, but one of hacking and of cybercrime with automation in cars, which can quickly become a matter of life and death. Here's Michael Senna, editor of The Dispatcher, who's been working on this issue.
We all understand that if we're not secure in our communications from the vehicles, if we don't allow the information that's necessary to be used for further automation of our driving, we're not going to use it. We're not going to feel safe, we're not going to feel secure, and the fact is that we won't be. The main problems that we have when it comes to cybersecurity versus in our phones and in our PCs, people who are attacking our telecommunications devices are doing it primarily to make money. I mean, they're thieves, they want something, and they'll do it one way or the other. With vehicles, we have a much more difficult problem. Mobile phones are in our hand. PCs are normally on a laptop or on a desk. But with vehicles, we have many more issues to address, primarily from the standpoint of safety. Cars can be hijacked in order to earn money, but something else can happen when that's occurring that creates an unsafe situation for the driver and people around. I mean, we can start driving cars without drivers into lots of people, and many people can be injured. So I don't think it's the same issue of being paid money. It could be terrorists, primarily terrorist attacks, or individuals who are acting as terrorists, not political terrorists, but as terrorists from another standpoint. If someone can take control of that vehicle, there's nothing you can do as a driver. You have absolutely no control of what's going on internally in a vehicle. You can't pull the plug out. Even if you turn the key off, the car is still moving. So it's a very different situation. That's why we're taking such a long time and great care before we turn over any of the driving tasks to a non-human.
Senna has been consulting with the ITU on IP since 2015, and is hopeful, however, that there are more protocols that can be used to prevent such attacks.
Before I began working with the ITU, which was in 2015, as the years went on and we became more and more dependent on IP, on internet communications, cybersecurity became much more important. And then, when we began to think about the whole idea of over-the-air updating, it became even more important. Once you allow the vehicle to be communicated with in many different situations, you have to be much more concerned with cybersecurity. And at that time, the ITU was almost alone in developing the standards. And now, finally, the standards are published. It's fantastic.
Non-profit organizations are taking the issue of cybercrime and security very seriously now. Yulia Morinets is the executive director of Together Against Cybercrime, an organization grappling with many aspects of cybercriminality worldwide.
People were just writing us, you know, can you help us? And not simple citizens, which is very important to help and to assist the users, you or me, but also the SMEs and big companies and also public personalities. They were in trouble with the identity theft or payment system fraud. And we thought we should develop a procedure in order to help to restore the damage and to restore the losses if we speak about the monetary losses. For the moment, we propose only two types of assistance. This is the assistance related to the payment methods and to the fraud related to the payment methods, actually. We do work with banks because we've developed the procedure in order not to go to the court, so out-of-court resolution procedure, so what we call ADR. And we also have something called cyberbullying assistance developed in Indonesia by our partner. If we take, for example, the card fraud is a little bit different. It's the same, actually, in the developed world and the developing world, right? But, for example, in the developed world, what we will see, we'll see more traditional card fraud. In the developing countries, it will be fraud related to the mobile payment solutions. But the problem, at the end of the day, is the same. We have a victim, so what to do with the victim, right? So, actually, issues are the same, but the criminals, they adapt to the national situation and they find the lacks in order to develop their criminal activity.
As head of the Center for AI and Robotics at the UN Interregional Crime and Justice Research Institute, Irakli Beridze advises governments and international organizations on international security, emerging technologies, and global political trends. His goal is to stay ahead of the criminals' game as much as possible.
Criminals can and are using AI already, and once the AI becomes more and more sophisticated and more sort of complex, it will be definitely used by criminals, or there will be definitely many avenues. Now look, there are three categories how criminals can use AI. One is digital crimes. So here we're talking about all the cyber crimes, but put on autonomous technology. So right now, most of the cyber crimes are conducted by human hackers who are developing malicious codes. Now in the future, we will have AI systems which will be developing that type of codes, who will not get tired, will not need food, will not need to be paid, and will self-learn how to do it, and will do it in much more complicated and complex way. So that's one category. The second one would be physical crimes. So we're talking about things like drones or ground robots who could be used for things like terrorist attacks, targeted assassinations, contract killings, and so on and so forth. You take a drone, you put on the autonomous technology, you give it a task, and it will execute the task, it will identify the target, and it's a very dangerous thing. And the third category of crime would be political crimes. And here we're talking about things like video manipulations. So even with the current technology, and maybe you've seen some of the deepfake videos floating around on social medias, with the current technology, it is possible to construct a video of you, which will look like you, sound like you, but would not be you, and will be saying things which you would not want to say. And that's a very dangerous thing.
As is abundantly clear these days with the response to COVID-19, we're all part of a mutually dependent ecosystem. No one government, no one industry operates in a vacuum. In 2001, the Budapest Convention was the first international treaty on cybercrimes. Ratified by 64 countries, it provided guidelines for cybersecurity national legislations. That mechanism still offers a framework for international cooperation. Marco Abiso is cybersecurity coordinator in the Telecommunications Development Bureau at ITU. For him, the issue of cybersecurity is a global issue and one that has to be tackled everywhere, especially with the extraordinarily rapid changes in technology.
There is the whole political element here when we talk about national state attacks, when we're talking about weaponization of ICTs at the geopolitical level. I see this as a threat because lots of countries are now starting to equip themselves with cyber capabilities that might be used as act of force. But this political dimension is managed more at the UN level. What we see more at the technical level is that cyber may impact positively on citizens in securing their own information, but the main threats and the main negative impact for the citizens is actually the stealing of the identities, okay? The stealing of personal information that would then generate a movement where we can actually as hackers or as cyber criminal access to your online presence and do whatever we want with that. Tapping into your accounts, tapping into your bank accounts, tapping into everything that is related to your online life. So this for us is what might be the biggest threat. The difference here is that because technology is faster than other disciplines, we need every time to catch up. Every time we are actually chasing, you know, what is the new emerging threats. And I think the adjustment of mindset is what is required there to take this from a different perspective. That is multi-stakeholder in nature, which for some other areas, you don't need that. But for cyber, you absolutely need to sit everything, I mean, to sit on the table together and to put everything on the table. But we are seeing much more awareness, and this is something that we are also working on a lot with the other partners.
Well, that's all for this episode of Technology for Good. In our next episode, we'll be focusing on the need to connect the world, exploring the massive infrastructural changes taking place across the globe, an especially urgent task right now, in these times where health, social and economic systems are challenged hard and fast. Connectivity is ever more crucial, and equally important is connectivity for all. Please do join us again. If you've enjoyed this program, please don't forget to subscribe to ITU Podcasts. You can find us on SoundCloud, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and more. For Technology for Good and the ITU, I'm Max Jacobson Gonzalez. Thank you for listening, and we hope you all stay safe and healthy. Technology for Good, an ITU digital production.